The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to yet another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. Today is secular Christmas Eve. That is to say, according to the new Gregorian Renaissance calendar, December 24th. And so I had some extra time today, and so I want to talk about something that has concerned me actually for a long time, and I haven't written anything on it yet. I haven't spoken about it yet, but as the secular world is running around buying things this time of year, of course for us, Christmas isn't for another 2 weeks. So that means we old calendar Orthodox people get all the best deals on Christmas gifts, which I think is one very good reason to go to the old calendar. I want to talk today about Russian symbolism. And I know this is an extremely rarefied topic. This is not an easy topic to grasp. You have to have some education in epistemology to really grasp it. But this is really meant to be a program for the more educated and for people who want to go the next step in understanding our world from an Orthodox and Slavophile point of view. We're going to talk about somebody who really isn't spoken about very much, really at all anymore, and it's Vyacheslav Ivanov, one of the leaders of the Russian symbolists at the turn of the century. And is somebody who really deserves our attention and our respect for a whole lot of reasons. I want to talk about Vyacheslav Ivanov as a philosopher, and really to get into the very concept from his own writings, which are, I guess, yes, some of his more seminal essays are available in English right now. But I want to talk about him really as a as somebody who can give us a brand new view of the world, a brand new view of epistemology and how we approach the world as phenomena and how those phenomena are interpreted. Of course, this is your classic, very early 19th century German idealism, and I think that this line is continually being developed. And it went from Germany to Russia, I think, really, you know, within 70 or 80 years. So we're going to split this up into a few parts. I want to talk about cosmology, you know, first and foremost, and what Ivanov, what he views as really the new approach here to epistemology, and then after that we will deal with the concept of art, which is very, very central to the symbolist movement. Now, I'm not going to say, of course, that people like Bele and Bloch and these other people invented this concept. The symbolists have been around for a very long time. But I think they're significant. I think they reached its apogee. The symbolist idea reached its apogee, in the Russian context at the very end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century. So first of all, let's deal with the question of cosmology. Point number one, we've dealt with this before on this program when we spoke of the metaphysics and epistemology of Skovoroda. But Ivanov, to some extent, it's a similar point of view that the logos, cosmos slash logos, is at the center of everything. This concept goes back to the Roman Stoics, who really did view the universe as a living organism, as a living being. And the logos is identified with the reason, the divine reason that's manifest in all objects, as well as the relations that these objects have among one another. It's the manifestation of the divine spirit in all objects. And this is something that existed amongst the pagan Stoics in Rome that was taken as rational and true and real by the Orthodox Church in the ancient world. And I don't want to deny the very close and very fruitful connection of Stoicism and ancient Orthodoxy, especially in the Greek world, specifically over the concept of the Logos. And Logos, of course, means word, and it also refers to the structure of all being. It refers to the manifestation of Christ as the second person of the Trinity, that is to say, the image of the Father. The Father contemplating his own knowledge, that contemplation, that image that the Father contemplates must also be divine, and therefore it is Logos. It is the externalized structure of the universe. Another way of putting that, and this goes back to Plotinus in the ancient Greek Neoplatonic school, it also refers to the world soul. Some people also refer to this as using the feminine Greek word Sophia or wisdom. I'm not somebody who's going to follow this Sophianist trend in modern and modernist orthodoxy. I don't accept that. Sophia is merely another way of explaining the existence of the Logos in the world or the imminent presence of Christ in the world of actual physical and phenomenal objects. So these are the first two concepts that the symbolists that Ivanov and his school, Bela and some others, this is how they view the phenomenal world, that it is inherently rational, that the divine spark, the Logos, exists among all things, providing this almost like a blueprint, a DNA, a genealogy, so to speak, of all things that exist and their relations with one another. Ivanov holds to some version of this of the medieval chain of being, where you have the unknowable God the Father, knowable only in his manifestation, that is to say, the Son. You have God the Father manifesting the Son in creation, or Sophia, the Logos, which itself is the world soul, which in its lowest manifestation is matter. But matter itself is saturated with energy, is saturated with this kind of relatedness, but also manifests itself in the souls of all human beings, and then finally in the lowest form of prime matter itself, prime matter in Aristotle's definition of the world. So what this really means, ultimately, what this chain of being from God all the way down to prime matter, is that divinity, Logos, is manifest in the world. It's manifest in creation. God is not someone who is, and I said this on this program many times before, and I'm going to say it a bunch more times, and it's a big problem I have. This concept of God is up floating in the sky somewhere. This is a false idea. The ancient church fathers rejected this idea, and people like Scovarota and Ivanov, and even the Neoplatonists and Stoics in the Roman Empire rejected this concept. God is not floating up in the sky. He is the Logos of creation. He is this rational connectedness among all things, this system within which is contained all other systems. I've always viewed this as really one of the great weaknesses of evolutionary doctrine, where systems cannot be explained. Differences in species might be explained. That's easy enough, and I certainly accept that. But systems can't be explained, because you need to speak of coordinated changes over time, utilizing a very large number of variables. And of course, the Darwinian synthesis has no concept of that. So we're talking about a system. The Logos is the nature of structural relatedness, in very much the same way that DNA creates the human being. So we're dealing with this concept of divinity manifest in the world, and so we're dealing with a sort of a monism, a singularity of creation, where it is the Son, where it is Logos, where it is Christ himself, who is manifest in the relations among objects. And this is the beginning of a symbolist science as well as a symbolist metaphysics. And yet we have a problem. We have a problem that the existentialists developed right around the time that symbolism really, you know, came off the ground in Western Europe and then in Eastern Europe. But this idea that our view of being arises from an alienation. An alienation that the human reason and the human will has with being itself. This concept of separateness. This concept of being separate from creation. And our idea of being derives from this level of alienation from the world. But the symbolists will take this one step further. And they're going to say that everything, including, you know, including Eden, including Utopia itself, exists imminently in creation. Beneath our phenomenal comprehension of objects and space and time lies Eden. Lies not only humanity, but all being in this perfect kind of logos-centered relatedness. It's something very very serious to people like Ivanov. Some Orthodox people don't like this idea. But the life of sainthood exists underneath the world of vulgar cause and effect, the world of power, the world of authority. Beneath that lies Logos in all of its relatedness. All action, when we deal in the phenomenal world, all action, all of our willingness is based on selfhood. And hence, is based in contradiction. What I'm trying to say here is that Ivanov and the Russian symbolists hold that all activity of the human being is sinful by definition. Because it insists that the part should have dominion over the whole. But any aspect of our willing, no matter what it might be, partakes of that epistemological reality. The part is demanding a separation from the whole. So all activity is guilt. All will is guilt. All will is death, because all forms of willingness. And maybe people like Schopenhauer would not entirely disagree with this. That all forms of willing leads to a logical contradiction, because the part is demanding its dominion over the whole. That means one thing, though. I mean, how do you conclude? I mean, where do you go from that? Ivanov and Bele and the symbolist movement holds that the true self is logos. It is being, it is impersonal, it is this impersonal relatedness manifest in nature. In the social world, it is subornost or subornopravania. It is this loving connectedness, among people who sacrifice for each other in the very, you know, based on the idea that the part could never dominate the whole. The part should never have any rights against the whole. The whole is this impersonal manifestation of God on earth. Our individuality is, almost by its very structure, sinful, is saturated with guilt and death. And that the very nature of the fall is this lack of relatedness, is this obsession about our individual will. So I know that this stuff can come off as very complicated and very difficult. But I wanted to keep one concept of this logos-centered relatedness of all, you know, of all aspects of being, material, phenomenal, however you want to put it, that serves as a basis of a symbolist science. And this can be traced back to Spinoza, and can be traced back further to the Neo-Platonist and then Stoic school in the early part of the Roman Empire. So that is the nature of the symbolist cosmology of Vyacheslav Ivanov and the Russian symbolist movement at the turn of the century. The second general concept here is that of aesthetics, the theory of art. Ivanov and Bele, these were poets, these are artists really by vocation, and so their approach to the cosmos and to this idealistic idea of science really is meant to serve the world of artistic creation. So, let's put it this way. All artistic creation of whatever kind is a way to open the phenomenal world to the manifest presence of this Sophia / Logos. Sophia is not a separate person. It is simply another way of expressing the existence of logical and rational relations within the phenomenal world. And it's maybe a way to bridge the gap between certain more positivist scientists and the orthodox approach to the phenomenal world and this kind of epistemology. I guess, you know, what we're talking about in terms of artistic creation is this integration of dynamic events in the phenomenal world in conceptual form. And we could do this in poetry, or in essays, or in sculpture, or in painting. And that, very much like iconography, both in the Byzantine and the Slavic point of view, that reality, all phenomenal reality in its artistic manifestation, which is really the real manifestation. You know, art is this bridge to reality. You know, this stuff doesn't seem to be all that difficult when we contemplate the mentality and methodology of the icon. And what the icon in its proper Byzantine and Greek rules is actually supposed to be. It is supposed to be reality. You have to understand this. The reality is not our perception. Our perception is always saturated by willfulness, by sin, by our egocentrism, by our demands, by our constant obsession with putting ourselves first. And we all fall into this. I've done it. You've done it. It's this kind of willfulness distorts our perception of external phenomena. And in fact, makes external phenomenon internal phenomenon. Because we have distorted our world through our own sins and our own problems. So Ivanov is, without really coming out and saying it, is providing really an iconic approach to epistemology where the icon is reality the way it is supposed to be, not the way we necessarily perceive it with all of our hang-ups and all of our problems and all of our sins. This is really the issue here. The icon is a window not to heaven, but to actual reality. Or, to put it differently, actual reality is utopic. It is heaven. And the only thing that keeps Orthodox people from viewing reality the way it's supposed to be is our own sins, our willfulness, our arrogance, this idea that we always have to be right and we always have to be first. And I, among the first, am guilty of this. As many of my supporters and detractors know, I always have to be right. I always have to be first. Everyone else is an idiot. Right? I mean, we all have this tendency. And what it really does is provide a reality with this unreal phenomenal aspect that we impose on it because of that. Reality exists not in of itself. Reality exists because it's meant to serve us. But the symbolist approach doesn't necessarily reject the idea that what we call external phenomenon is in fact internal. All being is, in Ivanov's world, something that is taken internally. But here's something else that makes some sense out of this approach to artistic creation. We take a certain phenomenon. We take a certain phenomenon and we appropriate it. We bring it internally. We bring it into ourselves, which can be a problem because that means that we give it all of these false shades of meaning. But then we do something else to it. Once we internalize this phenomenon, we change it. We almost infect it by our emotional state. And especially the state of alienation, which I think we're all in. But then what the artist does is he takes this now emotion-laden object and enriches and changes it and then externalizes it again as a work of art. The will is this means of explaining this kind of integral perception. There, when I say integral perception, you know, nationalists should, their ears should prick up here, because the word integrism or integralism is really, at least historically, another word for nationalism. So what we're talking about is integral perception, which is something over and above the positivist account of phenomena. What we're really talking about is external phenomenon in reality being internal phenomenon, and as internal, as manifesting within our own consciousness, within our own minds, saturated with our alienation and our sin. This is the sinful element of humanity that needs to be saved. This is a mental illness of which the Orthodox faith is, in fact, the mental home. We have to understand this idea. We're not talking about doctrine here. We're talking about the church as a therapeutic community. And it is the manifestation of the spirit over and above the logos as love. Love breaching the divide between our internal hang-ups and actual, real, external reality that, quite frankly, we don't have access to. And that could be striking for people, especially young people who are studying epistemology for the first time. 20 years ago, almost today, 20 years ago, I started on this path, studying Plato, and, you know, I've never left it. And it's humbled me. As arrogant and as difficult as I am, it has humbled me, because we can't put any moral value on any of our perception. What is that which connects members of an ethnic group or a race together? It's love. It is not this mediated perception. It is this idea that I am only a part of a whole, and therefore I am expendable. That kind of humility is absolutely central to the Russian symbolist movement. So what we're talking about, therefore, is that there is an inherent unity of moral and theoretical or scientific knowledge, that will is cognition, and cognition is life itself. We can't separate that which we work on in our external perception and how we live every day from the fact that our internal world, our cognitive world, is saturated with death and sin and willfulness and egocentrism. And we're all guilty of this. And that means that we then question the scientific enterprise, saying that you don't know what you're looking at. You are in service to the state, to the system. Your views of the world exist because they've been very well financed to exist this way. This kind of willfulness distorts our very cognitive processes. And that's something that we need to take very seriously here. So, given all of that, I want you to... Ivanov's stuff is actually available on Google Books. I think some of his essays are available there for free. And I want you to take a look at some of this stuff and to see how this could really alter your perception, because that's what the symbolists were really trying to do. When we come back, I think what we're going to do is to try to put more meat on these theoretical bones. So hang in there, my friends, and we'll be back shortly.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on The Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. let's return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Orthodox Nationalist. We are Greek Orthodox Old Calendarists, specializing in the Russian and Ukrainian Orthodox world and its national mentality as much as possible. I am Matthew Johnson, now covered in snow here in the mountains of southern Pennsylvania. And we are talking about Vyacheslav Ivanov and the symbolist movement in turn-of-the-century Russian metaphysics and epistemology. And it's something that's very, very close to my heart, very close to my mentality, because one thing that I've learned over the last 20 years of specializing in this particular area, I'm 38 years old, and I started this when I was 18, in college at the University of Hartford, where I received my bachelor's degree in 93. But back in those days, I distinctly remember coming to the conclusion, however inchoate it was, you know, I was a teenager, that metaphysics and epistemology has to be understood before we can make sense out of anything else. And that's what the Russian symbolists were trying to do. Let's put it this way. There are two approaches to the symbolic movement. And I'm going by some of the work of Gerard Jonsek in his Eastern European Journal article of 2001, which actually helped me make sense out of a lot of this stuff. Now, there's two forms of symbolism. The first is realistic and the second is idealistic. The realistic approach is to say that every object in our phenomenal perception is something that it reveals an element of reality. It also conceals an element of reality. It is a symbol. It is not necessarily something that is merely understood by some analysis of force and magnetism or chemistry. That's all very important, but that doesn't exhaust the central issue. All objects in our perception are symbolic. This is an extra scientific approach to phenomenon, in the very simple sense that any object that we happen to perceive often provokes in our consciousness all kinds of emotional and historical associations. I mean, to put it very simply, now here we just have finished this blizzard in southern Pennsylvania and on the East Coast. And, you know, the snow, as I look out my office window, the snow isn't merely this kind of frozen water. Well, that's this reductionist scientific point of view. The symbolist says that the snow is saturated with symbolic meaning. It's a personal symbolic, like, you know, when I was a kid and all the memories that the snow brings out of my childhood and how happy we were when school was canceled, to the metaphysical approach to snow, like you see in places like Siberia and American Alaska and northern Canada. And the deep poetic symbolism that snow has there. But, you know, even if you are more positivistly oriented and very scientifically oriented, you can't ignore the fact that these kind of phenomena are saturated with this kind of association. You can't ignore that. It does have that association, and therefore you have to make sense out of it. You can't pretend that it's merely nonsensical, as the, you know, Popperian positivist mentality says, and then move on from there. That's nonsense. That's not how people approach all of these kind of phenomena. But idealistic symbolism, on the other hand, is what we have said before, is a means of artistic depiction. It is a means of communication. So I can depict the snow that I see outside my window in some poetic sense or pictorial sense as manifesting, for example, the innocence of childhood. This is something that Charles Schulz did with Peanuts and his Charlie Brown Christmas special. One of the reasons why it's such a classic is that it reminds us of the innocence of youth, our own innocence, and how we have lost that innocence with all of our hang-ups and our self-absorption and everything else. My personal opinion of things like child abuse is that this is sinful mankind attacking the reminders of their own lost innocence. That's what I think child abuse is. Ultimately, I think child abuse is people who are faced with Eden, who are faced with utopia in the completely hang-up-less world of the child, and they can't take that confrontation, and so they lash out. I don't know if really that's true, but that's always been my sense of what child abuse really is. When I first had children 10 years ago, that was the first thing that confronted me, and it was shocking. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I was confronted with my own childhood. I was confronted with my own innocence and my lack thereof now that I'm an adult male, and how we've lost that. And I have all the hang-ups of every other adult male around the world, and yet I saw this little child who had none of that, who loved the immediacy of life, who viewed the world as symbolic, that the world was nothing but this adventurous plane where everything was a new adventure, everything was a new a trip into utopia, where a little kid could have fun with a piece of paper, where to us, of course, only a psycho would have fun with a piece of paper. For us, we need to spend a fortune in order to have fun. All of our hang-ups, and I remember it forced me to confront myself. It forced me to confront my hang-ups and the hang-ups of this society. If you're sensitive, having children will force this mentality upon you. And this is central to the idealistic approach to symbolism. You're not really just talking about objects in space and time. We're talking about all of the moral and historical and religious things that adhere to everything we see. Whether we know it or not, when we are caught in the rain, for example, you know, or the snow or the mud, we participate in this symbolic universe. The idealistic symbolism is a means of communication of this kind of thing. The virgin snow of Siberia refers, it's to some extent, to the old believers as this kind of ancient Christianity, this undivided love and devotion. It's saturated with symbolism. There's no getting beyond it. Nature is, in all of its manifestations, the symbolic presence of divinity. And we say this only because, not because objects confront us as bald objects, they do not. Objects exist and function only in relation. And, you know, when I was in grad school, I really suffered with this idea of the medieval connection, the medieval world of nominalism and realism. And it just frightened me to the extent that I could make an intelligent argument for both the nominalist and the realist position. And it bothered me, you know, that people like Plato and John Locke both made perfectly rational explanations of the phenomenal universe. Symbolism is something that seeks to bridge that. You see this in Ivanov, you see it in Vladimir Lossky, you see it in a lot of Russian writers that hold that there is no such thing as the object, because the object can only exist in relation. So if I look outside my office, I look outside to a beautiful tree that's right by my doorway, I realize that I'm not really looking at a beautiful tree by my doorway. I'm looking at an object that exists only because of certain soil, certain kind of atmospheric conditions, certain kind of genetic conditions, all of this existing in relationship to the ecosystem and the environment in which I live. So if I take that seriously, I'm not talking about an object at all. I'm talking about a system of relations. I'm talking about God. I'm talking about logos. I'm talking about energy. I'm not talking about things. I'm not talking about phenomenal things. And when I came to that realization, and this is not too long ago, I realized this is the secret to epistemology. This is a secret to the a symbolist approach to the world. And I realized, and I want my listeners to know that I come from a family, a secular family, a family of mostly atheists. And I converted to orthodoxy over great objection and rebellion. But I converted because I refused to believe that these intensely complicated systems, and then systems of systems, could have randomly come into existence. Systems cannot randomly come into existence. By definition, systems are complex entities that, in fact, include within themselves numerous, if not infinite, systems itself. And therefore, I saw intelligence. I saw love. And then when I had children, I saw that love confront me personally, and my ego, and my hang-ups, and my obsession with convincing the world that I was this great genius. And yet I saw these children who were able to be completely fulfilled by playing with a piece of paper or a simple little toy, you know. And it forces you to look anew at the nature of reality. God and nature exist parallel to one another. And I happen to think that this is really where music comes from. Music is this constant idea of spaceless time, of God and matter working together to affect our consciousness. All objects that we come and that confront our lives are a chain of symbols that in our own consciousness continue to provoke more symbolic chains. And it ends only with logos. It ends with Christ himself as the spiritual pattern, the DNA of all of that exists. Ivanov wrote an essay called Two Elements in Contemporary Symbolism, and the thesis of that was the following statement. I don't know if this exists in English. I actually read it in the Russian, and my Russian could use some work, so you never know. But here's the thing. A symbol is a sign that signifies not a specific idea. Symbols have varying significance. These are spread out over time and space. They're interconnected with all that exists. If you could find this essay in English, I would like to see it. Two Elements in Contemporary Symbolism is the idea that our confrontation with any phenomenal reality means that we have a confrontation with all of reality, because every object implies every other object, because we are constantly reminded of the connection of all metaphysical, epistemological, logical, and moral ideas manifested in all symbolic confrontations in our life. This cuts through all logos of experience and consciousness. And the Logos, or Christ himself, as the Word of the Father, the manifestation of the reason of the Father, can be seen in the systems in nature within which are connected thousands of other systems But these symbols become myths. And myths, the word myth does not refer to something that's false. The word myth refers to a symbolic understanding of that which confronts us in phenomenal nature. And therefore, true religion is one that understands this interconnection as the Logos doctrine, the manifestation of the Father, expressed to us by the Holy Spirit. Therefore, it is Trinitarian. It is one and three. It must be three. We're talking about the origin of systems, the manifestation of systems, and our understanding of systems. That is one and three. It is a Trinitarian world. It is the fullness of the cosmos. This is what St. Augustine says. This is why I converted to the Orthodox Church. This is why I dedicated myself to Jesus Christ, even though every cell in my body rebelled against that kind of submission. I couldn't help myself. The phenomenon and the essence or symbolic world of that phenomenon are two elements in reality. That when we are confronted by the world of symbol, we are engulfed by being. Being is more than what we perceive. It's also what that perception provokes in us, not just as individuals, but as societies and cultures. Reality is transformed via the Logos. In the Middle Ages, the signifying artistic world was that all objects have their place in this chain of being. The Gothic cathedral is a forest of symbols. It's a bottomless pit of symbols ending only. The bottom only could be found with Christ himself. Realism unites the miraculous with the natural. The I, the ego, can only then be manifest as art. Ivanov's essay, Thoughts on Symbolism, has, again, I've only read this in the Russian. If someone can find this in English, please send it to me. Symbolism is considered, in this case, the symbolic provocation, of the confrontation we have with empirical reality is seen as human union. It is what binds us together as people. It's what binds us with nature, and then ultimately what binds us with Christ himself as Logos. This confrontation awakens in us absolutely unutterable feelings of thought and idea. This connection between the ego and the non-ego is overwhelmed, and this overwhelming comes out in art and feeling and emotion and love. Words are never transformed. Words can never comprehend this stuff. That's why poetry exists. Poetry exists because the word itself in any language could never manifest the constant symbolic universe that we are confronted with every day. I really hope that Vyacheslav Ivanov and the symbolist movement is really seen. I try to make this as understandable as possible, to understand this very, very different approach to the scientific world and to the scientific realm that the symbolists had manifest. And of course, the symbolist movement was overthrown in the Bolshevik Revolution, and that was pretty much the end of it. Some of these guys went into exile, and I don't want to say that people like Berdyaev were apart from the symbolist movement. They were not. They were very much a part of it. But the Bolshevik Revolution came into existence, at least partially, by rejecting symbolism and rejecting what the symbolist mind was all about. So, I want to thank everyone for listening. This has been Matt Johnson in The Orthodox Nationalist, talking about Vyacheslav Ivanov and the nature of Russian symbolism at the turn of the century. I want you to read up on this stuff if you can. It is certainly worth your time, because we're talking about nothing other than the connection in nature between man and God. Goodbye. Whoa!
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Radio Ariane.